see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers now playing only in theaters. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
There was not enough sampling of what Montreal has to offer on this date, I have to say. Like, where's the poutine? Where are the Montreal bagels? Where's the smoked meat? Okay, I'll move on. Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor-adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon. Hello, and welcome to our show, a podcast where we discuss the finer things in life.
We love the finer things. I mean, who wouldn't?
Exactly. And fortunately, nothing could be finer than a hometown Bachelor episode.
We're so lucky to be here talking about this episode with two of our favorite guests, Max Gawdnick and Sam Usher of The Bachelor Dudes. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Does anyone here remember what happened at the beginning of this episode?
Yeah, they were all super scared of Nick.
Yeah,
I had forgotten that Christina was even...
Yeah, they were still talking about Christina, who I'd completely... And, like, not as a person, I hadn't forgotten about Christina, but I was like, oh, that just happened? I feel like it was years ago.
These cliffhangers are really just tripping me up. I don't like coming in the middle.
It sucks.
I want a new story.
The show is supposed to revolve around rose ceremonies.
And there are no more.
Yeah. No, there. How many weeks has it been since we've even had one?
Well, there was one this week.
Yeah, Nick
it was
just
an old school rose ceremony. It was like an Alex Michelle rose ceremony.
I would not call that a rose ceremony.
But that's what they used to be like. If you watch the first season of The Bachelor, it's all the
that's
women
true,
and like
sitting.
They're sitting. They're wearing turtlenecks and slacks and like sitting on a couch, and the bachelor is standing in front of them awkwardly. And then they have to get up and go get the rose and then walk back over and
but
sit on the
But I like the
couch.
Tension of knowing that someone is, you know, about to cry.
Like See, being right. reminded by Chris when there's just one rose left.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really tender impromptu ceremony because it was like the tension was gone. The stakes were gone. Everyone knew they were getting a rose. So there was a joke. I think there was a joke about Raquel, and all of the girls were laughing.
Yeah, that was actually really cute.
Everyone was having a good time about each other getting roses. They're giving up. They're giving hugs. My takeaway was that Nick, we've seen him do it a couple times over the course of this season. He loves chilling with all the girls and him. He, like, keeps walking into rooms where it's, like, all, and he's like, hey, can we all, like, chill in this room? And he loves to just, you know, shoot the shit with the group.
I had two takeaways. One is that the rose ceremony was very much like a bar mitzvah candlelighting ceremony.
Because everyone sort of had,
oh, it's like the main people in your life each get a candle. There are 13 candles for 13 years.
And you, like,
years.
Stand up there and you call out each one.
And everyone gets, like, a nice little poem. Mm-hmm. So there was, like, an anecdote with every rose.
Mm-hmm.
And my second takeaway was that it seems to be a theme that, like, at the beginning of every episode, the girls, but mainly Corinne, are, like, very much living in fear of Nick. And every time he's around, it's like, oh, now we could go home.
This is a new development for Corinne. We've only seen this from her the last couple weeks as it sort of dawned on her that she might actually be on the chopping block for the
They're,
first
like,
time.
Huddled in emergency blankets, like disaster relief blankets. And it just – I don't know. I feel like usually you're happy to see The Bachelor, but now he's sort of a –
menacing figure.
Important. Yeah.
He's a menacing figure for them. Especially when he was carrying, they couldn't tell how many roses.
That's the thing about roses.
When they're in a bunch
they
like that,
together.
When they're in a bunch of all the same color, how many in a hand?
Can I tell you the trick?
Please.
You got to count the stems, not the blooms.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Never would have thought of that one.
Because the blooms.
Max just schooled all of us.
Yeah.
On rose counting
stems.
Love a pod where I learn something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. there's more. Hopefully.
Well, we've barely begun.
But there was nothing to be scared of.
No, there was nothing to be scared of. Everyone was going to get to go to hometowns. But did Nick cry in that session? Did Nick cry in that session?
He was still teary, I think, from talking to Christina.
Unbelievable how much he cries.
I love it.
I like it, too. It's like, show some emotion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love seeing a grown man cry.
Men tears are a good thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with male tears. The first time, it was like, that was nice.
I love male tears.
The second time, it was like, that, you know what? Like, this guy's really raw. The 45th time this season, it's like, wow, this guy's got a quick trigger to cry.
I don't think of Nick as a huge crier, to be honest.
You don't?
I feel like when I think of Nick, I think of him mercilessly, like, massacring four girls on one date. Like a Jasmine thing. He wasn't upset to say goodbye to Jasmine. Well, like, that's the way I think of Nick saying goodbye.
Well, he cries at when he actually feels emotion, which is nice. He is, you can read his emotions on his face, and it's the same thing with the tears. He actually had a lot of respect for Christina and was upset letting her go. Mm-hmm. Therefore, he teared up. That seemed appropriate.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with the tears.
I love it because on The Bachelorette, there's always tons of crying.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see a bachelor who acts invested, like who acts like his emotions are involved and is getting vulnerable. But it is very weird when there's like a cliffhanger and then you come in fresh to a new episode and he's already crying and you're like out of sync with that as a viewer.
It doesn't really land when it's at the beginning of the episode and you're not sure what's going on.
Beginning of an episode, I'm expecting some beautiful establishing shots of like Bimini or wherever they are next.
Yeah.
It's great to be here. Excited for what's
maybe
on this
day. Maybe a close-up shot of like a frog just inching along.
Yep, or a beautiful wave.
Him walking along the beach looking pensive.
Yeah, but now you're getting that 20 minutes into an episode and it throws me off.
You know, we're just all out of sorts here.
It was like a horror movie the way it was cut, though, where the girls were sitting there being like, where's Nick? Oh, my God. Yeah. He's going to come get – and then it cuts to a shot of Nick like rambling along the beach ominously. Like, he's coming, girls. But they all get to go to hometowns.
And first we go to Hoxie, Arkansas with Raven.
Go Hogs. That was on the door. That was on the family
go
store.
Grain.
Go Hogs.
Go Grain.
Wow.
It was, but it's a go. So clearly they're Arkansas fans.
I'm rooting
makes
for
sense.
The, I'm
makes
rooting
makes
for the
sense.
Famous Hoxie Grain buckets.
What are you talking about?
Oh, where are the secrets? Where they put the secrets?
Are they called grain buckets?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Silos. Grain silos. I grew up the next town over from Hoxie. We call them buckets.
It's one of those super regional things. First, they go for an ATV drive to a grain bucket.
Mm-hmm. To tell some secrets.
And Nick was very into Raven. He was like, look at you, all rugged.
He liked that she was kind of like showing her tomboyish side.
It's taken me a long time. I've been, to be honest, and I know we're all that honesty here. Mm-hmm. I've been out on Raven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. She's perfectly kind, just kind of out. But when she got off that ATV, took off her helmet, swung her hair around, and said, welcome to Hoxie.
You were like,
count me in.
Your type is like pin-up girls from calendars that feature tractors.
My type is...
I think Max is learning about his type.
This is a journey of emotional self-discovery.
It's Southern tour guides, like going on an ATV tour of Swampland, saying hello, greeting you.
Yeah, I actually saw more chemistry between Nick and Raven in this date than I have the whole season. Like, they've had good conversations, but I thought it was, like, a little bit sexy with them, like, driving around in the mud.
Wait, a little bit sexy? A little bit sexy?
It was a dry humping situation.
That was a lot of bit sexy.
Yeah, a lot of bit sexy.
Okay, but for me, I didn't find it so sexy because I thought being, like, making out in the swamp?
Yeah.
Not sexy
also,
content.
Raven was, like, a touch drowning.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a little bit too much
it
immersed.
Was a little bit waterboardy.
Greg, I didn't find it sexy. I found it upsetting.
My fiancé turned to me and was like, what are they doing? They're going to get MRSA.
Yeah.
It is.
But
it's
he
truly.
Was like, no, really, that's how that one girl got flesh-eating back. And I was like, I know what you're talking about. Trust me. Like, we're on the same page here. It really freaked me out.
Between Caitlin's season, or I guess—
The swamp— element was not
sexy.
Not sexy.
I was horned
but the
up.
Playfulness.
Okay. This is a family podcast.
No, but that was a bachelor.
That's a bachelor
it's a bachelorism.
Yes. No, I got it.
Every second Nick has put into his body since leaving Caitlin's season
was leading up to this.
Oh my God.
100%.
He was cut AF in the swamp.
He was also like, wait, there's a body of water. Time for me to take my shirt off. finally.
Yeah, it worked.
These gym selfies have not been for nothing.
He also ruined a pair of boots.
That's fine.
I mean, they look like
he got
nice
a new
boots.
Outfit like 3 days I mean, later.
You're right. But he did get a full new outfit.
Like, I did feel sort of emotional about how she was wearing like a white shirt and he was wearing his nice date outfit and then they just drove through mud on purpose. I was like, why don't you just go for a nice drive on your ATV?
You also can't talk to each other on ATVs. No. There's no communication going on. It's
well, maybe
just
they're
racing.
Better that way.
And that's a dark comment on their relationship.
And we know we didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance to share secrets with each other because they went to the grain silo, which holds all the secrets.
Do you think that's where
that's why it's so big?
Do you think that's where the kids would go do drugs?
Drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs
yeah.
in
yeah.
town.
Drugs in town, though. That's you go do drugs at the grain.
I think you do drugs and sexual things, and
maybe the railroad tracks too, which we saw her walking along in her intro.
I feel like
you don't
want to
do drugs on
Hoxie.
The railroad track.
I know Hoxie.
We've seen all of Hoxie.
If you drop me in Hoxie right now, I'd get to the Raven's house perfectly.
You'd be able to get to the Raven's house.
That's the one thing we'd definitely be able to do.
You also have an in with the police.
Yeah.
you know a policeman in Hoxie. Don't worry about it.
So that whole sequence I loved because the cop pulls up and instantly I'm like, that's her brother from the teaser we saw of dinner.
Also, like, he's mic'd.
Yeah. He was mic'd.
Yeah, it was definitely no tension at all because
I wasn't
it was clearly
concerned,
a setup.
But Nick was a little bit concerned. He's, I don't know.
He seemed a little concerned.
Raven, actually, I thought did a great job playing
she sold
along.
It, yes.
Oh, my God. Incredible.
Well, how many times do you think Raven's done that by the grain bucket?
This is like her move. By the yeah. her move.
Oh, with
scared
her brother.
Boys with the brother pulling up,
like oh,
blaring
stop.
The sirens.
Oh,
it's
I
a classic
police.
Raven move.
I don't know if she could because they all know each other.
Everyone in Hoxie.
Hi, Raven, isn't
how many
that your
people
brother?
Live in Hoxie?
I don't know.
Well, what they would do is they call up people from my town.
Just
a couple towns over.
Mm-hmm.
We'd bring
I was
going to
guess 2,500.
2,500?
Let's see.
I don't know. I don't know the population.
You're really close. 2,719 as of 2013.
So it's one of my great skills, actually.
Yeah. Wow, that was impressive. I have literally no concept.
Basically, everybody knows everybody. I think I know that many people in you recognize the face.
Yeah, so because, you go to high school with people.
Yeah.
Like, you watch your friends' kids grow up with your kids.
It's a good place.
You know what? I'm thinking about relocating.
What did you think about their conversation with their parents?
That was...
It was a...
I felt really bad.
What an intimate family moment
and
for Nick
yep.
to be a part of. It was so...
I understood
that they wanted, they're like, the Bachelor producers were like, hell yeah, we have this emotional moment. For them, it's gold. And all I could think was like, this is so inappropriate for Nick to be present.
It was so
but
upsetting.
But this is the first time they've been able to talk to their daughter in like 6 months.
Right.
Weeks.
So, of course, they're going to tell her your dad's cancer free. And she was so overcome with emotion. And then you realize her TV boyfriend is sitting there going, that's awesome.
I'm so happy for you guys.
Also, like 15 years down the line when they're reminiscing about this beautiful moment where her dad was declared cancer-free, you know, 75% chance it's not Raven who marries Nick. Oh, and Nick was there. Remember Nick was there?
I also feel like her dad being cancer-free is a message that could have made it through production at some point before then.
Yeah, you
ping
her.
Like her family could have reached out and been like, hey, just tap Raven at some point and let her know. But
that's
okay.
But then they wouldn't be doing that because then they wouldn't get to have this moment on the show. Like not the family, but the producers.
The producers.
They might hear that and be like, oh, we're going to save that.
Oh,
for
that's
a big moment.
So dark.
It's very dark.
Do you think Nick had a good time during that conversation?
No.
Yes.
I think he did.
No, I think that he left Hoxie and beautiful moment, but I think he left Hoxie and that was the end of Raven. I think she's going to get a rose, but I think that was the end of his relationship.
Oh, wow. I thought
really?
That was the start of Raven.
I honestly didn't see, aside from the swamp makeout, a lot of like affection between them. It seemed like they were kind of palling around and you like – The emotional moments with her family, that was really clear. He didn't touch her, really. He didn't know how to comfort her. And he has a more natural rapport with some of the other women.
I agree.
And some of the other women's parents.
Families. Well,
yeah,
right.
Like,
yeah.
It seemed like in Hoxie, this is actually like a true analysis. This is no jokes. It seemed like he was not speaking the same language as everyone else in the family. Whereas then you would see him in later conversations, which I'm sure like we'll talk about. They were having some like real serious adult conversations.
And I think Nick likes that family.
But I think it was because there just simply wasn't so much time for Nick during this incredible moment for the Poe. I call them the Poes. I think Raven's last name is Poe, like Edgar Allan Poe. I call her Raven Allan Poe.
I'm pretty sure we know what it's Gates.
It's Poe. But so I feel like they just had more business to take care of than Nick.
Yes. But then they still had a conversation with the dad and Nick. They still had a conversation.
What an odd thing to have to then pivot. He started that conversation by saying, I want to start by saying, I'm so happy for the news you got. Yeah. And then he's just like, so if I was to ask your daughter to marry me, like, it was just weird.
His now classic speech that we heard four times.
Oh, God.
Painful.
I got to say, the top four emotional moments in Bachelor history for me when Raven and Mr. Poe, when she said, I'd never have any other man besides you walk me down the aisle. Like, whoa, that was some real happy, nice things out of nowhere.
Oh, God. That was so hard for me.
You hated it?
Because I hate what's behind that in terms of cultural expectations and norms.
Yes.
Their relationship is really lovely, but I was sort of like, why wouldn't your mom walk you down the aisle, you know?
Yeah, I was
emphasis on the patriarchal setup in on all of these dates, really. And that was really frustrating because I love all these girls mostly. And I think they're like cool, strong women. And then it came down to, you know, talk to the dad, ask for permission. If you couldn't walk me down the aisle, then no one would.
That sucks, and it always sucks. I guess just for me, it was put in very stark contrast to the cancer-free discussion with Nick there.
Yeah, I was more focused on the emotional connection between Raven and her father. And I did appreciate that Raven's dad in his conversation with Nick. And I couldn't quite tell here, like, whether Nick was reading the family and then moving towards the dad, whether he had also spoken to the moms and they had cut it, or whether, like, Nick himself felt that the father was the one he needed to talk to. I couldn't quite tell. But I did appreciate that a few of the dads, including Raven's, made a point of saying, well, I trust my daughter. I trust my daughter's judgment. If she's happy with you and thinks she's going to be happy, then, you know, I'm on board. Which I think is when you're presented with that question, is kind of the only acceptable way.
Yeah. And when presented it by, like, stammering emotional Nick, pseudo-emotional Nick, like, I don't know, these poor families.
Yeah. This goes beyond just Raven's thing, but a lot of the families, one of the first things that the parents always ask them is, what is it about my daughter that you love so much? Which is a totally legitimate and accurate question. And his answer pretty much to all of them largely circled around how attractive they are.
Yeah, he thought
it
they
was
were
not
hot.
Great.
And it was not great. And I also think that it seems in line with the Nick we've come to know this season.
Sexed up Nick.
Sexed up Nick, who's kind of got a thing, like his, the way that he judges people is maybe not the same way that I would, the same like level of importance I place on different things, but it was really comforting. I think it was Vanessa's mom who asked Nick what he thought, and he's like, well, when your daughter first walked out of the limo, she was my favorite. And she's like, okay, I don't care about that part. I'm glad you think that my daughter is, like, attractive, but, like, what else is there?
No, I loved that exchange with Vanessa's mom. And we'll get to that when we get to Vanessa's date.
It's funny. That was the four parents' fantastic conversations. This episode had – we were talking about it earlier. I thought I had, like, several truly tender moments, even by Bachelor standards. Not, like, hokey tender. Like, legitimately tender – thought-provoking, like, we need to have a larger conversation about these kind of things moments, which is, like, that's a really important thing for The Bachelor to achieve. So it's hard to talk about one of the conversations because when you're trying to compare the four different girls, it seems like you sort of have to
tie them all together.
Like, it was like this at this family, but in similarly or differently, it was like this with this family.
All four hometowns were so, so different.
Yeah.
And the
And
depth.
The patriarchal stuff was different in each hometown. Mm-hmm.
And I just think the depth of this episode was so different. I guess why I was so caught by surprise by that Raven's dad moment is because this whole season I feel like has been like how to put your hands on boobs and cutting seven girls in a single episode. This was like sort of the first time I felt like we were watching a season of The Bachelor and not an extended version of Paradise. A little bit.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I thought it was.
Felt like real emotion, yeah. Finally. And at this point in the season, I want that. Yeah. I'm kind of over the like Corinne show of how funny and crazy and who's the villain. Like, I don't care anymore. I want to watch some emotional investment.
Nick also feels that way, and that's why you see him cutting like three girls all of a sudden, because he's like, I'm not having this emotional connection with them.
Yeah.
Why are they here?
I didn't mind that. I thought
that's been great. I just think it's come at the maybe at the expense of him developing connections with the girls he does.
I think
like
a lot of it is editing choices and the fact that they wanted to include so much of Corinne's ridiculous one-liners, which are super entertaining. But I think that and I also, from what I've just like seen chatter-wise, it seems that maybe some conflicts between Rachel and Vanessa were also left on the cutting room floor. I don't know what the motivation behind that is. So I think we just sort of ended up with these gaps in in those emotional connections. And like, I'm happy we're finally getting to them.
Like the infamous volleyball game.
Right, which made no fucking sense.
Maybe the worst moment in Bachelor history.
Because it was not a storyline that made any amount of sense. And you could just tell, like, wait, we're missing half of this. Okay, so then we move on to
Corinne.
Rachel.
Which, next.
Wait. Oh, yeah. I skipped through my notes.
Loved this date so much. I love Rachel so much.
Rachel's
great. I'm so excited that we get to see her for an entire season.
So, yeah.
Are we just going to skip talking about her date because she
is no longer in the running?
No.
There were a couple I thought it was really funny when I guess she was doing it in the moment when they first got to the church. And she was saying, like, I just really want him to feel comfortable. And then you see him sitting in the church looking so uncomfortable.
They definitely did that on purpose.
Yeah, they did a great job. They found the one moment where
they were like,
they did on purpose. And yet the narrative was that he was extremely comfortable. But I don't know. He's very illustrative with his face.
I thought that the narrative was that he was extremely they definitely made him visibly uncomfortable. But then the narrative was that he was extremely embraced. Everyone else around him helped to bring him into it.
The arc is like he wasn't comfortable and then he becomes comfortable.
Right, exactly. By everybody like working together and holding hands and like everyone wanting the same thing, which was everyone to be comfortable.
They're all like, therefore, Nick got to that place. Let's make this tall, white drink of milk feel as comfortable as we can in our safe place.
I don't think he was so embraced at the family, but that's, I guess, we're getting to that. There were just some interesting.
I mean, the church was definitely a very supportive environment. Clearly, Rachel is involved in the church, and
it clearly was a really important space for her. I thought it was like a sweet moment.
I wondered whether he had been warned because he came up
wearing his suit.
He came fresh off an interview.
Yeah, he was. And I was like, is he just terrified of her dad, or like, did he?
I couldn't tell.
But she was like, "Yeah, you're dressed great." So I get the sense that she passed along some.
It's so sad to watch this for me a little bit because they seem to have the easiest chemistry.
I know. I totally buy any of them.
Buy a lot.
Like, Rachel giggled immediately when Nick walked up. They do like kind of like the run and hug thing that feels very natural. And then you're like, but we know this doesn't work.
She's immediately branded as an also-ran. Okay, so, not a good idea.
I think the most interesting question is because I get it why she has been announced already, and I don't think it's so offensive. So I think the most interesting question from this is trying to figure out why was she announced early? Because clearly there's a method, there's a reason, there's any
number. Chris Harrison said it's because they didn't have enough time to recruit people specifically for Rachel. Because
we'd heard that.
Yeah, that's something that we've heard.
Casting.
I think he did an interview about that recently.
Okay, I also had heard the theory that like she didn't have enough of like a social media presence, like people weren't really gravitating and following her enough, so they maybe wanted to put the focus on her from viewers.
That because her relationship is clearly the strongest, but she's no longer someone that people are talking about as a contender.
So I think it's a little bit different. I think that we all agree watching last night's date was, and with the knowledge that she was going to become the Bachelorette, it read more like the beginning of a larger conversation that the show is now willing to have. Whereas if she had not been announced as the Bachelorette, it's like we're just dipping our toe for one hot second in this really intense conversation that is a good conversation to have, and then she will lose. Then the show
Let that happen in 2 weeks.
Well, but then the show ends up looking as kind of tone deaf.
Tokenizing, maybe?
Tokenizing and tone deaf as it always has.
What comes up?
And even worse than the fact that they were willing to embrace it for a second and then sort of be like, oh, we like told this story and like, bye, see you later. But since we know that she's coming up in the future, it's sort of like we are getting to know a new element of the show. A new depth of the show.
I guess I felt like the most tokenist thing that they did by announcing her early was make it like, oh, well, she's black, so obviously she's not going to win. So who cares?
Right.
We'll announce her as the Bachelorette.
Message.
I think it can't help but have that effect, though. You know, it takes her out of the conversation, which is, I think, when people form their strongest attachments
is in these few weeks. I agree. I would have minded it less if they had spoiled themselves even like a week or two later.
And it does feel very like, oh, she's different.
Right.
So we need a special recruiting for her. Although I also like hope – I really, truly hope that we do see more men of color in the contestant pool.
They're going to be able to get guys for her. Like, it's The Bachelor. The Bachelor people turn out for The Bachelor in this era.
Chris Harrison's explanation to me sounded like, oh, we want to make sure we can get men of color on time. And that just made it feel even more – just less than in a way. I don't know. It was just an interesting choice.
Well, also they have dug themselves a hole of being kind of a racist show for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, it would not be surprising to me if they had a tougher time recruiting non-white men, non-personal trainer men.
Mm-hmm. Which I can't wait.
Software salesmen.
And to the point about the larger conversation, I hope that that's true. I almost got more of the sense that they were trying to get it out of the way. Like, this is what her family thinks, but Rachel, you know, is fine with being an interracial relationship. She knows that other people will talk about it, but to her personally, it's not a big deal. Now her family has met her with a white boyfriend, so that won't be a new thing. Like, it almost seemed like they were like, let's get all the race stuff out there, and then it maybe won't have to come up as much on the show next season.
Interesting. That did not occur to me that this would be like a mass dump of intensity that they were then going to use to dial it back moving forward. Because my takeaway was like, clearly this is an important conversation to be had. And it's one that the show has been many, many years late in having, and that they've picked someone who is like clearly so smart and so confident and so able to carry these situations that we're going to like – we'll ride with Rachel the whole time. And like, we're going to learn, we're going to deal with things, and we're going to like, it's making us confident in her.
I actually didn't think it was so intense what went down when we got to meet her family.
Just compared to like
Corinne.
The bar is also, the bar
compared
is
to
so
past
low
seasons.
For actual,
like talking about race at all.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much most of what we saw was them being like, do you even know what our traditional dishes are?
How did you guys feel about how much her date focused on race? Because I did see kind of mixed commentary on Twitter and I personally felt torn about it, because on the one hand, I was like, just because she's not white shouldn't mean she doesn't get the typical fairy tale hometown date if we're playing into that narrative with this show to begin with. On the other hand, I thought it was a million times more interesting than most things on this show, because The Bachelor likes to pretend we live in this world where things like race and religion and political view don't matter, whereas anyone who's actually dated in the real world knows that those things play into our daily lives constantly.
Well, you say The Bachelor likes to live in this world. I think that could be edited to say Nick likes to live in this world, and I'm really glad that that's the way that sort of the date was informed, that based on the tone Nick set, which was – he kind of kept saying like – The way he was articulating why he loved Rachel and why she was black was sort of like, well, I love her in spite of her race. I love her, but I don't even see that. I love her because it came off to me as a little bit tone deaf.
I definitely felt what you were saying. I think he was trying to express that it wasn't a fetish for him.
Oh, interesting.
Because he did also say, I'm not colorblind at one point, which I appreciated because I do think it's – it could have come off.
But then everything
way.
Else he said was sort of trying to prove how colorblind he was, which I was glad that Rachel's sister Constance kind of teased that out a little bit.
I loved Constance.
She was great.
I also think we need to remember that this was filmed literal days before the election.
Before?
So, yes. This is like the week before the election. So one has to assume that was on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
I actually wrote down what Rachel's sister said. She said, I respect the fact that Nick says, I don't see color, I see Rachel. But with the climate that we're in, you know, there's more racism coming out. You need to know how to navigate.
She said it's not something you can hide and ignore and live in your own bubble, mm-hmm.
I think she interpreted Nick as maybe hiding and living in his own bubble a little bit. And I didn't think mm-hmm. that was like antagonistic at all.
No.
It was just a good conversation, especially since Constance is in an interracial relationship herself with Alex.
Yeah.
So that like it seemed even more pertinent because she really does know what she's talking about.
Alex is the more huggable version of Nick.
Alex is a good guy.
I like him.
Yeah, I liked him.
He's a little bit like Bob Guinea.
He's like, I've made this happen. Let's see if you can handle it.
I also like how he sat down and was like, looked at Nick and was kind of joked, like, I can't help but notice you are white.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like the family is comfortable talking about race.
Her family was awesome.
Yeah.
Her mom was great.
Separate from all the race stuff, like her – so we were – the patriarchal stuff that we were talking about, her dad wasn't there. Her mom
– right. He's a federal judge. Apparently they met off camera and unsurprisingly, not a great look for a federal judge to be on Bachelor.
Yeah. And same with like professional quarterbacks. It's just like people people of any form of esteem. You just like stay away from that.
But if you have your own signature olive marinade, you're good. You can be on with your own olives.
But so in that patriarchal thing, her mom, that you know, there's like the different archetypes that moms can fall into in these conversations. Like all these this show only has so many hometown conversations. They're all like follow a certain script. Mm-hmm. But her mom, that's like the exact tone I look for. For in a mom, when I see someone act, I'm like, oh, that is dope. You aren't so like warm and affectionate over the top. You're not like, I mean, this is just so great. You like, it's an interview, and you're like skeptical. There's got to be a level of skepticism. Yeah.
But she also had a warmth to her,
for sure. Yeah.
100%. But it was appropriate.
You could definitely see Rachel growing into being her mom in the way that you often do on these dates. But like, it was such a good look. Like her mom is so self possessed and. It's beautiful and just like had the perfect mom tone. I think I tweeted something about how it made me wish like that I could have brought my boyfriends home to meet my mom, because there was that with your dad, and you see this with the dads, there's a bit of protectiveness and a little bit of, well, if you ever hurt my little girl.
Yeah,
and
right.
With the mom, it's able to be a little bit more of just I was my daughter once and I have found a man who made me happy and I hope that you can make her happy. It's a little more of a calm discussion.
I also thought, we'll get to it later, but I also thought Vanessa's mom had a really great balance also.
Yeah.
Vanessa's mom and Rachel's mom were two standouts for me.
Peas and pods.
But Kathy, Rachel's mom, apparently liked Nick. Seemed like she felt good about
Nick does seem to be like genuinely winning people over in these conversations. It doesn't seem to be sort of when they're always like, you know what, you're a good guy. I feel like we heard that a couple times where there's the level of skepticism and then they say, you know what though, you actually are a good guy. So there must be something about Nick.
I think when you meet Nick, we've met Nick. He comes across well in person and he's thoughtful and he looks you in the eye and he actually has a conversation despite his, you know, mumbling and awkwardness a little bit. Like, you can tell that he's thinking things through when he says them, and you can tell he tries to take in what people say to him.
Right.
I think it also read that this process has been somewhat taxing for Nick. Mm-hmm. And to see
that.
Right. But I think for the parents to see that this is a guy who is taking this seriously and who has been affected by this crazy situation he's been in now four times, to see someone who is not affected by that would be maybe a red flag for a parent.
Right. And he's very close to his family, and he saw his family go through this with him twice.
Mm-hmm. Several times.
And he's spoken about that, about how difficult it was for them, and we saw them on the show. So I think he's definitely able to relate to the families on that level of knowing how difficult it might be for them. We're going to take a quick break, but stick around. When we get back, we'll have more with Sam and Max. Stay with us.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/lovetoseeit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lovetoseeit. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20. 1 in 5 Americans have learn a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit. And I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
Before we get back to the podcast, Emma, have you checked out our news quiz on Google Home?
I haven't. What is it?
It's like a weekly quiz on Google Home where you can just check out how closely you've been following HuffPost top stories, including the most important ones, the Bachelor stories.
That actually sounds pretty cool. Potentially more fun than some of the group dates this season, like the shoveling poopy one.
Yeah, they should definitely do a trivia night instead. This is sort of like it.
Can I see the quiz in action?
Yeah, let's try this question.
Welcome to the HuffPost headline quiz. Let's see how up-to-date you are on the news. Here's your first question. Which contestant threw up during her one-on-one date with Nick? Is it A. Corinne, B. Vanessa, C. Christina, D. Rachel?
B. Vanessa.
You got it.
Wow. Remember when Vanessa threw up and Nick kissed her anyway?
That's what we call true love, Claire.
Romance at its best.
So you're telling me there's a new quiz like this one every Friday?
Yeah, if you have a Google Home, you should definitely try it out. You just say, okay, Google, talk to the Huffington Post, and the quiz will start.
That sounds pretty sweet. Now, back to The Bachelor. We take a turn to Miami. And Corinne's hometown is clearly like the fun, crazy one. Mm-hmm.
Corinne says she just wants to have an ordinary day, the like every day for her, but she's with Nick.
And spend
it's funny because I thought that she was a CEO of a multimillion dollar company.
I had also been under that impression.
Yeah, but apparently
she runs that company.
Yeah, she does.
But that only takes a couple minutes a day, and then the rest of the time she is just walking through the shopping district
the very
of Miami,
exclusive
throwing
malls.
Money.
Right. Very exclusive. I was like, I don't think exclusive mall is a thing.
Well, I know that when I go into Forever 21, no one is pouring me champagne, so.
Had you ever heard of that store, whatever that store was called? I hadn't heard of it.
I feel like it's the kind of store I wouldn't have heard of because I can't afford to shop there. He tried on a $1,200 sweatsuit.
He bought
I actually thought
well, he did not buy
it. No, but he was gifted.
I thought he looked good in the sweatsuit. that one. That oh. I thought that was a cool look, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, also, but Nick loves all the style stuff, so I feel like he was just, like, having a grand old time.
Oh, Nick had an incredible time.
Until he looked at the price tags and started breaking out in hives, which was the most relatable moment of his life.
I was bummed, because I like Corinne, and I've liked what she's brought to the table and what she's brought to this season, and that whole sequence was just... It was upsetting.
It was just, like, sponsored by capitalism.
Yeah.
But that's who Corinne... Like, that's not new. That's Corinne's
I guess
deal.
I was expecting Corinne to pivot.
Yeah. I think she was... I think it was a return to...
You can't expect a pivot this late in the game.
Well, no, because
I think someone tells you who they are.
It was a disappointing return to form for Corinne, because in the beginning of the season, she showed up, and she was so dramatically over the top that it was like, oh, God, this girl is literally just here to get her own show. Clearly. Clearly, that's the only reason. Then somewhere in the middle... I don't remember what the moment would have been, but, like, she started to grow on me, and I feel like she calmed down a couple of notches. And then it
once
sort of,
Taylor got booted,
yeah,
once,
I guess it was maybe when Taylor was gone. And then I was sort of like, oh, maybe this girl actually, like, is here for, like, something close to finding love. And, like, maybe she actually is a little bit starting to like Nick. And then we go back to the hometowns, and it was just – it seems so clearly like an audition for – her own show. Clearly, she was like, if you had cameras around me all day, every day in Miami, this is what I'm going to give you. And I was like, oh, yep, no, she's here for her own TV show. And that's too bad.
Also,
and
she's
I feel
very,
played now.
She's very young. She's very young, and I think that showed in
she's
in
not
this
that
state.
Much younger than Raven,
actually,
though.
Yeah, they're only about a year apart, which is so
that young.
She's 24.
No, that's the thing. We keep saying, like,
36.
24. Weird. She's a lot younger than him. It's a big age gap. But she's not so young.
Right.
Like,
she knows what she's
feels
doing.
Young.
She feels
she
very
acts young.
Young.
She acts young.
But I actually thought that, like, the reason I was so dismayed, I guess, by the shopping spree and the whole, like, nodding your head or shaking your head if you like the look, the classic movie trope, is that I thought, like, I actually kind of thought her relationship with her dad, because they didn't really show as much of her mom, was less daddy's girl than I would have anticipated. Obviously, it was once you see her pull out the Amex Platinum and spend all that much money.
Yeah.
But, like, just the dynamic at the table was a little bit nicer than I was anticipating.
I mean,
we have to talk about the dynamic at the table.
Let's talk about
Olive Gate.
But first, she buys him a $3,000 sweater that looks like it's from The Gap, and
she also
along
gives,
with jeans
gives
and
rules for shopping.
I would not have bought. I mean, I like that sweater, but
not
that
for $3,000.
Yeah, no way. Yeah. That's just a bad buy. Jesus That's Christ. A bad buy.
Like, look, you can get some fashionable things for a far lower price.
Go to J. Crew.
Yeah, like, go to J. Crew. That sweater is
spend
always
$300.
There.
But Nick's been to J. Crew. Nick's done that.
Nick graduated.
This was a step up. Yeah.
I think Nick feels more comfortable with that. He looked because that would be his life. He would have a wife who is comfortable dropping $3,000 on an average shopping day.
I think Nick looked uncomfortable,
Nick is, like,
but looked like he was having
a lot of
fun. Making
mental notes of, like, I have to go on Dancing with the Stars, like, 7 times.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. I feel like he was having fun, but was also mentally calculating whether he could ever be married to Corinne.
And I think the answer was no.
Don't you think that the mental calculation was already done before he ever landed in Miami? I think he was just there literally having fun. It was just a trip to Miami and a crazy day with a crazy girl.
Well, let's hope so.
No emotional weight.
I
mean,
he genuinely likes Corinne, I don't think that he has been thinking of her as
Well, I guess
two.
I'm the only one who thinks that he really has – Corinne is the only one he has a really connection with at all. I guess Rachel's disqualified from that. But I've always thought that his relationship with Corinne – I guess it's because it's the only relationship
it's just,
we see.
We never see them talk. And she doesn't like to talk. When they just talk, she's disappointed.
But he likes her.
But she has
adult
combos.
I know, he likes her, but
sometimes
he likes the other women too. I just
– Yeah, I guess
– I don't think her relationship is anywhere above Raven and Vanessa.
Prior to this week, I would have said it's above Raven. But I guess now I'm charmed by Raven.
Oh, so that's the – well, so Corinne then tells Nick that she loves him in the most awkward, forced way possible. She, like, can't even make eye contact with him. And it really seemed like it was just – like, this is the time to do it.
She follows the playbook. There's a playbook, and you say things at a certain time, and this is the Bachelor playbook.
So much so that she knew that Nick wasn't allowed to say it back.
Yeah.
She pointed that out.
That was funny.
But
you know what? That's good. Yeah. She should know that Nick.
No, they should know that. But like
Vanessa, it throws Vanessa every time.
Oh yeah, it
she's
does.
She's consistently.
I don't think Vanessa. I think Vanessa thinks she's on another show. Yeah. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, it just was odd to me that she knew she had to do it, but she couldn't sell it at all. She sort of said,
and she can sell a lot of things.
Exactly. I would think if of anyone, she would be good at selling something like that. And then so they finally are going to the family home, the Olympios home, where
like it was very beautiful.
Like a penthouse kind of situation. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. There's some height there.
Yep.
And
beautiful view.
He meets,
as Nick
said.
He meets Raquel.
Oof.
This was upsetting.
So upsetting.
Like, I buy that they have a close relationship with Raquel and that Raquel is very important to Corinne. And I don't knock that at all. But if we're going to say, like, Raquel is part of the family, she's such an important part of this date, to have her serving just felt so gross and weird.
Yeah.
Like, what? Just have her fucking sit at the table.
Yeah.
It was very upsetting.
Clearly a deliberate choice by the show.
Or by the Olympias.
I don't know. Whatever it was, it was the wrong choice.
The show and the editing did not decide to take out that upsetting part.
There is a world where Raquel is... Like, there's a different type of archetype for the supportive member of the family, Nanny. And I guess that's what I thought it was going to be. Let me take you back to The Parent Trap. Chessie, the character of Chessie in The Parent Trap.
Yes.
That's Hallie's
timeless reality
Nanny.
Show.
But, like, that kind of a thing. Like, a friend. The way that she was sort of described, if you take away the cheese pasta and that's the cucumbers. But, no, she is
– it's very awkward.
Dare I say not a nanny but a maid. Full-time maid.
They're talking about her. Raquel. They're talking about Raquel as they're all sitting at the table while she puts plates of food in front of them.
And pours their wine.
And they're talking about her in the third person. Like, it's very uncomfortable that Raquel is literally putting plates in front of them. And they're saying, why would they make fun of you about Raquel? Raquel is great. She's part of our family. She's literally pouring my wine right now.
And
like, as family members do, I sit down and expect every member of my family to just wait on me.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then Nick's private interrogation of Raquel was uncomfortable as well and just seemed very forced. And
it was
sweet when Raquel said that she loves Corinne, like she's one of her daughters. And I believe that, you know, if you grow up with someone and that person does part of the child rearing, they probably hold a very special, you know, place in your life. But it was just the service element was really weird and throwing me.
That was a very deliberate choice by the show.
I agree.
And right on the heels of the $3,000 shopping spree. It just
right on the heels of Rachel.
But again, they can only show us stuff that is happening. Like, I don't
Sure, but they can choose. They could have chosen that the dinner just is on the table.
But what are we supposed to take away from that? Are we supposed to put less import into it because the show wanted to show us that?
No, it still happened. No. Yeah. I don't think you take anything less away from it. I'm saying clearly they wanted you to take something away from it.
I have no doubt that we got an accurate depiction of Raquel's
role. They all seem very comfortable.
100%.
Also, it's okay to say we employ a woman.
Right.
But it was just the gap between the way that they spoke about that relationship and then what we saw.
They tanked Corinne.
It was just the most unself-aware.
It was like the Rogers family, for example. I'm sure they have some people helping them out around the house. But you don't see Jordan saying, you know, it wasn't set up like that.
Well,
there have been other families with wealth on The Bachelor before.
It was just set up
but
for...
But even wealthy families don't always have live-in
No, they don't. But when they do, they're not always sort of... turned into memes and caricatures.
But the whole thing was set up for Corinne to be going. She's going home. That was it.
Well, Maybe.
I think so. Yeah. No, I agree. I think so, too.
I think that's what it was.
Especially because we then saw this conversation.
Can I first say something about dinner?
Yes.
Because...
Were you sad there was no cheese pasta?
I was relieved because I've been getting so many tweets saying that Nick lied to me about meeting Raquel. I never asked him whether he met Raquel. I asked him whether he tried her cheese pasta, and he said no. I don't think he tried her cheese pasta, but he did meet her. And Corinne says, Corinne avoids describing Raquel as her nanny in front of her family, which I found very odd. And then she says, the girls in the house used Raquel as something against me. And they're all like, why would they do that? She's great. She's part of the family. And Corinne says, oh, I told them about Raquel. And then they said that I had a nanny. And I was
literally described her as your nanny to the other women.
That is how you introduced her. And I wonder if that's not something they say in the house, because she didn't seem to want to tell her family that she had used that word.
Well, I actually think her dad's reaction, his first question to her saying that Raquel was a weapon used against me in the house, his dad's first question was, why did Raquel come up?
Right.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very fair question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was a horrible guy.
No, I didn't think he was a horrible guy at all. A hell of an olive maker.
Well, I think the olives were made by Raquel.
Oof.
Ooh, dark. And he took credit in front of her face.
Conspiracy.
He took credit in front of her face.
Well, so they said Raquel made dinner.
Damn.
They said Raquel made dinner. Damn. And then they were very excited about how good it was. And they kept waiting for Nick's reaction.
That was great editing with the music while Nick was chewing the olives. Like, I had time.
I personally hate olives, I would have done exactly what Nick did.
I like olives.
And you
like
say,
olives.
I don't like olives. There's a divide at this table.
Yeah. That's the best. I think I like olives now because of this.
I like olives a lot, and they didn't look great.
Really?
They didn't look great.
You're like, not the olives I would have chosen at Whole Foods.
But they looked like olives from Whole Foods.
I have to avoid the whole olive bar area at Whole Foods because the smell makes me ill.
You're that turned off by olives.
I'm in the same boat.
You had a horrible time with Corinne.
Oh, yeah. Well, another thing I love is watching people casually drop thousands of dollars on a few items of clothing.
Yeah, no,
when I worked as a sales clerk at J.Crew, it used to like make me like contact awkwardness. I was like, really? $1,000 pants? Okay. Cool. That's fine. I'm going to get my manager.
It was interesting to me how I think it was a few of the parents were kind of questioning what are Nick's hopes for career.
That was interesting too. These were some great hometowns.
Yeah,
they got into
which I thought was actually a totally fair question for Corinne's dad to have. It was interesting though that he framed it as like, will he have enough money to support all of your financial needs.
Yeah. Oh my God,
that,
Max.
That whole mm-hmm. conversation made me so uncomfortable, because what it came down to is, I've trained my daughter to like expensive things, and I don't see any problem with that.
Those things.
She is allegedly running a multimillion-dollar company, but she needs her husband to keep her in those things, which to me doesn't – like if
although
she is
Corinne
an independent –
said that she was happy to be the breadwinner.
And her dad seemed like kind of okay with that. I think it shows her dad's business acumen to spot this guy as, this is a guy who's clearly off track from what he originally set out to do, and he gets it. And again, it's all colored by Raquel and the shopping spree and the olives. Like, none of this is good. But he – like, I understand what the concerns are.
Yeah, I thought it was a fair question to lobby.
Okay, I'm not sure if I heard this wrong.
He said, what happens when all this goes away? And, like, it is true. What does happen when all this
goes away? Well, I don't think Nick quite knows what his path is besides Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
And maybe showing up when Chris Harrison hosts Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
But I don't think it's just a question of when all this goes away, will Nick be able to support you? It's a question of when all this goes away, will you still be interested? Like, she's definitely seduced by the Bachelor lifestyle.
I think Corinne might be able to get enough Instagram sponsorships for the both of them.
That's true. And
also,
he has plenty.
Did I hear this wrong, or did Corinne's dad, when he asked about the breadwinner situation, I thought he said, you have to think of the worst case scenario. Like, would you be okay with Nick being the stay-at-home mommy?
Yes, he did say that.
Which I found very uncomfortable because, okay, so if you're a caretaker, that's feminized automatically.
That would have to happen if he was going to stay at home with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Stay-at-home dads, not real men,
not
apparently.
By the way, I think he works out of the house.
Yeah.
So he is a stay-at-home daddy,
despite
bringing in all the big bucks.
And we got no clarity on the mom's role. She doesn't appear to work in the business. And
we also really hardly saw her.
We hardly saw her. She and Corinne seem to have more of just like a chat, like a girl chat. Raquel took on the role of her mom. So Raquel does all the work of caring for the home and raising Corinne and her sister. And their mom is just, I guess, shopping. Like, yep. What are we supposed to... I don't know.
Shopping.
Well,
I'll tell you what did seem chill, though. I'll tell you what seemed
the
chill.
The scotch.
The cup.
No.
The cup with the thumb.
Those were,
oh, the thumb
chill
was great.
Chill cup alert.
The those thumb were was wine great. Glasses. They were drinking whiskey out of wine glasses.
Sure, scotch. You put your thumb you right put, there.
Scotch is a kind of whiskey.
It's rare to see a man let's so proud as when Corinne's dad pointed out the flat part of the cup for the thumb. That, like, I get it. He might not be have so much to be proud of in his life, but the cups.
He probably brings it up all the time.
Hey, actually.
If you put your thumb there, actually.
So that went well.
Yeah, that went very, very well. And Nick also seemed to appreciate the thumb stuff.
But it's just another, it's like, our life is, look at this cool shit we have.
They're the most materialistic family in Miami. We'll limit it there.
I'll be honest. None of it upset me. None of it, like, literally none of anything that happened on this date upset me, except for probably Raquel serving, because you would have to take that date seriously at the start to be upset by any of it, and I never took any of it seriously whatsoever. It is just a crazy girl auditioning for a different show and a show trying to highlight that crazy side.
It didn't surprise me, but it upset me because I did think Corinne had turned a corner. But I guess you can't take the Miami.
Well, you know,
girl.
You know when you go home and you just suddenly are slamming your door and yelling at your dad, like, fine, I'll go out whether you want it or not. And mm-hmm. like, no? Okay.
On that note, let's move on to Vanessa because we're really running out of time.
It's
here.
A thing, though, like regressing to the way that you were when you lived
that's
with your
true,
family.
That's yes, except that is true. Corinne yes. is, I guess, always regressing because she still lives
but
with
she
her
got
family.
Out of the house for like the first time for 6 weeks.
Right. And
she
by
was,
like week four, she
growing.
Seemed to have progressed a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay,
so then
state.
We head to Montreal, which there was not enough sampling of what Montreal has
nope.
to offer on this date, I have to say.
Well, Vanessa also, I think they were. I mean, obviously, all told, what's a day in the life like
yeah.
for you? Do that with him.
We learned about the Montreal education system.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Vanessa doesn't really do fun stuff. Like, she works and she hangs out with her family on the weekends.
No, I really enjoyed – I enjoyed the date. But I just – as someone who used to live in Montreal, I was like, come on.
Oh.
You got to eat the food and, like, walk around.
A little bit of poutine.
Yeah, I was like, where's the poutine? Where are the Montreal bagels? Where's the smoked meat? Okay,
when
I'll
have your hometown date in Montreal.
Well, I wouldn't have a hometown date in Montreal, but
you never know.
The classroom sequence was beautiful.
That's not where I grew up.
I really loved the classroom
stuff. Yeah, I did too.
No, but you can just choose a place like Kayla. She was like,
I don't have a home here, and I only lived here for college, but let's go there.
Wandering Kayla.
But everything about the school scene was really touching.
It was lovely. It was really, really beautiful. And it was another one of those, like, actual moments evoked
real
emotion.
Tender moment.
Speaking of auditioning for others, like, I would watch a show of Vanessa's job. I thought that was really nice.
Her students seem to have such genuine affection for her. She seems so
and likewise.
Great.
And she
so wonderful, great at what she does. And I love that they actually got to spend time with the students. And
that was
the,
really nice.
So just to
really
establish,
nice.
Vanessa works at a bilingual school for special needs students who are over 21. So he came in to meet all of her students, and they were waiting with signs and flowers.
And some
great.
Of them
crying.
Started crying because they missed Vanessa so much. I thought that was really touching.
I got it. The only upsetting part was that I thought the French-speaking students were a little bit alienated. And it was just a lot of English. And who knows how many of those kids
really
didn't speak
catering
English.
To this American audience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing that she probably said everything again in French, but why would they include that?
Yeah, I don't
know. I mean, why would they include that?
Vanessa's a
talent. They wouldn't have included it.
Vanessa speaks so
her
many languages.
Language thing, I couldn't get over the language stuff.
It was pretty impressive.
French,
well,
English,
so impressive.
Italian.
The accents.
And Lord knows what else is
remember,
Mandarin.
This is my second Lindsay Lohan reference of the pod. Wow. But you know her crazy new accent?
Of course.
That's sort of what the Grimaldis have going on. It's like a mix of Canadian, French, Italian, and it just is like an international accent. It's good.
I
like
that.
Yeah.
I
like
her
it
grandparents,
a lot.
The grandmother speaks any English, or she's just straight Italian.
Or straight French.
No, she was speaking Italian.
She was speaking Italian.
So yeah.
But maybe French and Italian.
I like to think that the grandmother didn't speak any other languages. The grandmother in an Italian household, I think, should only be able to speak Italian.
It was really nice of Vanessa. Vanessa laid out
I'd really like to unpack that statement, by the way.
I think it's
keep that grandmother in the home speaking only Italian.
And the grandfather, both of them. But it's really nice to think that the head of an Italian household should not be able
You're
to speak
preserving
any other
the
language.
Old world.
Exactly.
I thought it was very courteous.
Well, the French Canadians feel the same way about French.
Piacere.
So.
Vanessa really...
Mangiamo. You notice that one? That means let's eat.
Yep.
Mangiamo.
I would say this point in Italian if I could, but I'm not as worldly as the Grimaldis or you. I thought it was really nice that she laid out and illustrated what it means to just to be the child of divorce. It means that you're going to go to one meal and then you're going to go to the other just in case Nick didn't understand.
Mm-hmm. Had we seen them discussing who her was, family before?
Well, who was the one who was like, someone said that their parents were divorced.
Maybe it just didn't stick out for me.
Yeah, that's possible.
I just thought that was silly. Like, they made a big deal out of...
No, she sort of... Because in the past, we've seen divorced families on the show. If it's possible to do them all together, like, if they
will.
Can be in the same room, they will. And she was like, I chose not to do that because that's not how life will be.
That was great.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I guess the other time we've seen that is Chase's hometown. Also to
Chase's dad.
And that he saw his dad separately because his dad is on terrible terms with the family.
Right.
So that was kind of the only option. And kind of not on great terms with Chase either. It was a very tough day.
Did Chase come in third?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
Who remembers that guy?
Tommy Lahren.
And this is also when we learned that Vanessa had a breakup that was,
of course,
really
devastating
bad.
To her entire extended family.
That was not something that we'd heard about before,
no.
right? But she sort of mentioned it as though they had clearly discussed it before. Like, what
there's
happened?
A lot we
in
don't
this?
See.
I know there's so much. What happened in this breakup that was so traumatizing to her, her family, her extended family?
Maybe he made her grandma speak English.
Oh my God.
Maybe not.
Feels like there was something more.
How could he make her speak English if she doesn't know how?
Maybe he just really tried very hard on
successfully. So I thought, Vanessa's with her families, there were two large questions. One was this like mysterious, terrible breakup that we never heard about before. The second thing was that her family seemed to be honing in, or at least the editing was honing in, on the fact that her and Nick were like pretty legitimately not on the same page necessarily with the rest of their lives, and that there was some sort of a disconnect or some sort of a conversation that has not happened yet that you would think should have at least been tangentially answered. So when they said, what's the plan moving forward, the answer
is I have literally no idea.
Right.
I think it was her sister who said, like, you guys literally live in different countries.
Yeah.
I appreciate
that.
Yeah, I did too.
Because usually even at hometowns, like, there is a vague, like, understanding or there's an answer. Like, you seem like there's some sort of a semblance of a plan. You can see how they'll figure it out or reconcile it at some point. This one seemed like, no, for you two to be so into this at this moment – you guys have clearly not discussed these really huge things. And I thought her family was highlighting that in a very effective way.
I think it makes a lot of sense for her family to say that. I also think Nick is just being very cautious because he doesn't want to introduce those conversations with the woman that he then sends home. And especially Vanessa would read so much into that. And then if it didn't work out, then we discussed a future together. We talked about, you know, him moving to Montreal. We talked about our lives.
But it does
seem... And
then
it's taken away.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And often at hometowns, they don't really know what's going to come next. You know?
No, but as the family, it makes complete sense that they would be like, you don't live in the same country.
Right.
There are a lot more logistics that need to take place. If,
right.
You know, if Vanessa's going to move, or if they're going to move countries, one of them.
Right.
There's a lot that goes into that. It's not easy.
It's more of an issue when you have someone like Vanessa who doesn't seem as though she's sprinting to go be the next host of First Look or something like that. Whereas, like,
although
maybe
she does have a history on television.
Yeah, she
does.
She
has an IMDb page.
I know, but
a lot of people were freaking out about. And to me, I was like, that seems like a good thing if he wants the person he's involved with to move to L.A.
Definitely.
Like, yeah. But after seeing all those family members and all those students, like, it was kind of nice that they were so concerned because it makes that seem a little bit more genuine. She is an integral part of those communities, and it'd be sad to have her ripped away.
It's also, like, I got the sense that she's sort of like their angel in the house. Like, she does so much for the family. She, her job is helping people who depend on her to a certain extent emotionally. And when and she's so knit into the fabric of her family that when she's hurt, they're all hurt and they can't handle it. Like, they were sort of like, maybe just don't do this because we'll be really upset.
When she was going to throw up in the anti-gravity ship, they all were also going to throw up.
Yeah, they're literally physically connected to her. But, like, it almost seemed a little bit like she was being sheltered because they didn't want to see her ever get hurt because it would be too hard on them. And I, like, that almost seems, too close-knit, like, if that's possible, because they were sort of discouraging her because, like, her mom was like, it was so hard on me when her last breakup happened. I don't think I can go through that again for herself. And Vanessa is sort of their little spirit of the house that they have to kind of foster and guard around.
This is also, though, where we get to that uncomfortable exchange about Vanessa's looks between her mom.
That was crazy.
He had the bedroom eyes on when he was answering. He's like, she really made an impression on me.
But also, like, talking to a girlfriend's parents, like, not only is that not the right thing to say in general, like, to anyone, like, what's your favorite thing about, like, whoever your girlfriend, boyfriend is? Like, well, first of all, they're so hot.
And they have had some good times.
But meeting the parents, how can that possibly be the thing you lead with?
How dumb do you have to be?
I think he also referenced the fact that he gave Rachel the first impression rose to her parents. Her mom, because she was really beautiful. Yeah, as though that means anything to just like refer to these self-referential bachelor things. Yeah. Like, step out of the world for a second, Nick.
And I'm not trying to – I can't remember how her mom phrased the question. But I think sometimes what parents do in these conversations that trips up simple people like Nick is, what first drew you to my daughter? And then, like, he's like,
literal.
Oh, yeah, the first thing. She was hot. She looks super hot. And that
it's
was,
so
I mean, also
him.
Her
he
brain.
All he needed to say was, like, oh, she got nauseous in the ship, but she
it's
was okay.
So easy.
Like, that's
it's such
nice.
An easy answer. Yeah. There's 10 million
things
you can say.
You can say something very vague.
Yeah.
And
could
he went
say,
with
like,
the definitive
luckily,
worst one.
Luckily, he got a second chance with Vanessa's dad.
Yeah. And
another good guy
went.
Alert part two.
I love good guy alerts.
Yeah.
What?
We gave Vanessa's dad a good guy alert. We're just putting all the listeners on alert.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That we're about to talk about a good
Anytime
guy.
You meet a good guy, that's an alert. Good guy alert.
I guess it's more of a bachelorette thing because there are more good guys.
Right.
There are. But we saw an unusual number of good guys this episode.
Yep. So just an alert to all the listeners out there.
Vanessa's brother also got
good guy alert.
Yep.
Good guy. Somehow Ginger.
Paolo.
No one else in the family.
Yeah, Token
to
Ginger.
Be.
It happens.
He also was understandably very concerned about her job prospects were she to leave Montreal.
They had some
all
very
legitimate
questions.
They seem very,
very
close.
Legitimate.
I think she's very
close with her entire family.
I think you said he loves her more than anyone else in the world. And then I was thinking about her other sisters.
Seriously.
Yeah. They didn't leave him.
Okay, so on to dad.
Smaller
he was not,
vibe.
Not immediately impressed with Nick.
No.
Good guy alert.
He's like, wait, did you ask all the dads about whether?
Yeah,
which was a great question,
Nick,
I thought.
Nick asked for the blessing, and he's sort of like, I'm not comfortable giving you a blessing.
I thought that was an okay thing for Vanessa's dad to get hung up on, but not for Vanessa to get hung up
on.
Yeah, it weirded me out that she was surprised. Like, this is – they can't only ask one of them.
No.
Right.
That would ruin the show.
Yeah.
That's not how the show works. I think to an extent – the families are definitely within their rights to be like, hey, this is fucking weird and I have real concerns because this is real life for us. I do think the people who go on the show need to have at least a little bit of awareness that, like, the lead isn't going to say I love you before the end.
Corinne
the
knows.
Lead is going to ask
all the families
for, you know, some amount of reassurance.
But I do think that – and Nick has said before – that it's good when they get emotional because it means they care. And I really see that with Vanessa. It's hard for her to be rational because she's very invested.
She is very invested.
And she's trying to find these crumbs of hope that he feels the same way. And then when they're dashed away, she reacts very viscerally.
Yeah, I think she's genuinely having a very difficult time at this point, which makes sense if you're very into someone and you're kind of coming towards the close of this experience. And yeah, like you said, you are looking for those kernels of reassurance.
Crumbs
but yeah,
of hope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, crumbs of hope.
Crumbs of hope. Copyright that, Claire.
Yeah, no one's written
and
that.
And she's comparing herself.
I'm going to take that. It's going to be my book.
Oh, wow.
A memoir.
A memoir. Yeah,
it better be a memoir about, like, a terrible illness that you suffered.
Well, I'm going to write a good book. It's going to be about crumbs of hope.
Your book is going to be, like, the best book. It's going to be tremendous.
Each chapter is a different crumb.
Mature savior Vanessa, who is fixing Canada of all its ills mm-hmm. and is just a good person.
She's the female Justin Trudeau.
Yes, yeah, good point. Much.
But I kind of understand why she's so fixated on this and so insecure about this, because her major foil that she's had to compare herself to is Corinne. Mm. So that's the other relationship she's and the 29 other women. But, but like, she sees herself as different than the rest of them, and I kind of understand why.
I also think I still think she's the one that's going to be there in the end.
Me too.
Me too.
Me too.
Which will be a bit of a shame, I think. You know, it's too bad. Pretty much every season, it seems like there is that one really obvious person from the very beginning. And more often than not, that person, like, ends up winning.
And that's Rachel this time. Because I don't think he has that kind of connection with anybody else.
I think
maybe Corinne.
Once they did that vomiting thing, once they had the vomiting, I was like, oh, well, that's like.
But it didn't really stick.
Because they showed you that it didn't, like.
I don't know.
I feel like they were maybe trying to trip up the audience.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a major.
And not have a Lauren situation where it's so over the top obvious.
Which sucks. And I don't like being so over the top obvious, but at least it adds a sense of authenticity that, there is this diamond in the rough. There is, among all this silliness, there is a real relationship here. And I don't know. Nick didn't bring it for me.
You're a purist.
Yeah.
He does get the blessing eventually the father.
Thank God.
After her father says, among other things, when you have kids, when you have a daughter and the man comes to you and asks for your blessing to ask to marry her, and he's asked three other guys, what would you think?
Oh, yeah. And he says, what does that blessing mean to you also?
Yeah. And Nick sort of says that I won't make this decision with Vanessa unless I'm sure that it's right. This is very real to me. And her dad is like, okay, here's a blessing.
You Take got it. Your blessing.
This is what you want. This is what you came for.
Pound it. Looks a little Jewish humor in there.
God.
Sorry, Claire.
In a few years, I'm going to know all this.
I opened
Claire
the pod with candlelight.
Into the tribe.
You are.
Wow. Mazel.
Oh, unreal.
Thank
Welcome.
You. I know. It's amazing that in all of New York, I found a Jewish man.
Yeah. I know. Wow. We accept you. We accept you.
Sam,
one of us. One
Sam
guys.
And I are amateur cantors.
Yeah.
So next time we'll hook you guys up with like a human.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. Okay, we gotta wrap it up. Our producer.
I know. Our producer hates Jews.
He's also a member of the tribe. So, yeah. Oh, God. Guys, we gotta.
Andy Dorfman in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Shalom.
All I could think about was this end cliffhanger. Well, A, there wasn't a frickin' rose ceremony
again.
Yeah.
But this end segment was filmed like blocks from where I live in Williamsburg. And they just a real nice PR moment for the William Vale Hotel.
Very.
But I just Beautiful. Couldn't believe that I was so close to where they were filming over
there.
And I had no idea. And it was
Andy
only
was
a couple
there.
Months ago.
Nick
yeah.
was there.
Corinne.
They were there together.
When that
Corinne,
picks up.
Corinne was there feeling really good because she bought Nick such a nice outfit.
When that picks
that
up next
Claire.
Episode, that looks like one of the all-time most boring conversations in Bachelor history.
Oh,
I
yeah.
hate when they do this every season.
I think he's going to marry Andy Dorfman.
I know. They always do this where they're like, and then it changes everything. And then the
what
ex
did she
walks
come
in
back for?
And says, I just want to let you know that when I chose, I thought about these things, and you should
yeah,
too.
Right.
Nice to see you. Goodbye.
Follow your heart. Be true to yourself.
You know, I actually thought Andy brought up a lot of good things.
Andy actually really helped clear my mind. It's like good to see her. It's good to talk to her.
I'm glad we were able to have that conversation before I move forward.
Just so bad. Skip those first 10 minutes. Start the episode 10 minutes in.
Okay, and next week they're starting this new show.
Which actually looks pretty good. It's a mini series about the gay rights movement.
Oh, When We Rise?
Yeah.
But it's not just the gay. Isn't it a lot of movements?
I looked it up. It is apparently focused on the modern gay rights movement. And it's the guy who did Milk.
Let's focus on the issue.
So issue is that it starts at 9, and so next week's episode is actually only an hour long.
What?
Great. So we're only getting – we're probably going to get the Andy situation, then the rose ceremony, then
– Fantasy suites.
No.
What?
Then, according to Wikipedia, it shows that the next week is half Women Tell All, half – Week 9, part 2.
Okay, this season is the worst story producing of any reality show ever.
No, they are all over the place.
It is going to make absolutely no sense, so we can look forward to that for another
few
weeks.
You have a format and you stick to it. You stick to your format.
I want them to just dive in to part 2 with them just like making out on the bed of a fantasy suite. Be like, remember last week when they had dinner? Here we are.
That's really upsetting. Makes me want to do a Hine Mato.
And on that note, that's the end. Cut it.
And now, welcome to Feminism Fails, where we rate the most cringeworthy anti-lady moments of the week on our very own patented Feminism Fail scale.
1. You do you, bro. 2. That's questionable. 3. Not cool, people. 4. The 1950s are back. 5. Gender equality is straight up dead. And now it's time for Feminism Fails, which we had no trouble coming up with this week for the first time in a while.
Yeah, it was rich territory.
First, Nick keeps implying to the women's parents that he likes each woman because she's hot. We're going to give that one a 2, just like, Nick, get it together.
Yeah, probably to the parents is not a great time to objectify your partners. Next, Corinne, purportedly a C-suite executive, but she needs her husband to maintain her lifestyle, according to some conversations.
The finer things.
Exactly. She's used to the finer things. We're giving that a 3 just for the casual assumption that she would not be the breadwinner despite her extremely important seeming job.
Then Corinne's dad, in a conversation with Corinne, asks if she would be okay with Nick being the quote, stay-at-home mommy, because obviously taking care of children makes you a woman. We're going to give that one a 4 because that's just deeply, deeply problematic and really plays into why a lot of men feel emasculated and uncomfortable taking on that caregiver role. Guess what, y'all? It's 2017. Anyone can be a caregiver and be damn good at it.
Yeah. Next, Raven's dad says that he thinks he might be handing Raven off to Nick. It's a really sad and really sweet conversation, given the news that they'd just gotten, and Raven and her dad are both very emotional that he will probably be there to see her get married. But the underlying assumptions in the statement are still pretty retrograde, so I have to give that specifically a 3.
And then finally, Nick makes a specific point to ask the fathers for their blessing. Who will think about the moms? We're going to give this one a 4 just because it plays into these really retrograde assumptions that fathers hand their daughters off as property to the men that come calling for their hand in marriage.
Yeah, you better get permission before you go asking a daughter.
But of course, to these dads' credit, they pretty much all threw the decision to their very adult daughters. We have our tweet of the week. This week it comes from Bachelor producer Elan Gale at The Year of Elan. If I was on The Bachelor, my hometown date would just be all my relatives trying to warn the person I was dating about how terrible I am.
Yeah, same.
And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guests, Max Godnick and Sam Usher, and our producer, Nick Offenberg.
If you haven't yet, remember to find Here to Make Friends on iTunes to subscribe and give us a rating and review. We're also on Facebook, so please like us. You can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emily Rose. Or you can always send us an email at heretomakefriends@huffingtonpost.com.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.